Jesse Jackson once said, "Leadership has a harder job to do than just choose sides. It must bring sides together." This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and in today's episode of The Untold Stories of Central Minnesota, we're going to get into the untold stories of St. Cloud Mayor Dave Kleiss. Mayor Kleiss graduated from St. Cloud State University, served in the Minnesota State Senate from 1995 to 2005, and in 2005, he defeated incumbent mayor John Ellenbecker, and then was reelected after running unopposed in both 2008 and 2012. Recently, I sat down with the mayor to talk about a little bit of the history of St. Cloud and what he brings to this office and our city through his love of history. But first, we'll start off the interview with a hard-hitting question about his time as a student at St. Cloud State University and the shenanigan he was involved with that maybe not that many people know about.
You were part of a documentary about something that's dear to my heart because I'm from Iowa, about cow tipping.
I did a mockumentary. back when I was a student at St. Cloud State, I graduated from high school. I went into the Air Force. I was a little non-traditional less non-traditional than what would be considered non-traditional now, because I was still, 20 years old when I came at St. Cloud State. So I was still, came out of the Air Force. And when I was a student from 1985 to 1989. It was kind of that start of the whole, people finally had some cameras. That's when it became more affordable for the video, but they were the big honkers. So we had some friends, and myself that, we were also kind of, I got into this whole, public access, when it was just starting to be a big deal too, because you could go to a studio and you could check out any of their equipment and then go tape things. Similar to what takes place now, and St. Cloud doesn't have that full access that they used to have in the past because changes in the cable company system. But by federal law, it's required under some of the franchise agreements with cable. So that we cable access, and I used to get some cable access equipment because I was still, after I got out of the Air Force, I was in the reserve, so I was down in the Twin Cities. So some friends of mine there at the reserve base, and some friends of mine here when I was going to college, we decided to put together. We played along with some films, and we decided to do something on cow tipping. And it was actually something people did. Yeah, and I grew up in a farm community, near Litchfield. And, so we thought, why don't we do something? And so we put together a 30-minute program. I had a lot of folks, we went all out. We even, had people sign releases, which you had to do for public access, because if we use their images, they'd had to. So we did that, and we had everybody act, and it was, my college buddies plus my buddies from the military. And we started with a little, I was the host of Wake Up America, we called it, the program. And we had a little, we even did, we even took a song, who's the singer who does Morning Has Broken? Cat Stevens is it, who changed his name, of course, and he was one of the few artists that didn't copyright any of his material, so we could use it we used it as our opening, that song, because in order to do something public access, the music you use had, has royalty and has copyrights that didn't. So we used that, some other music, and we shot kind of a documentary, and we had actors come in. We went out to the St. Cloud Reformatory and had a roving reporter out front, and then we shot to a scene where we were interviewing inmates who had been arrested for cow tipping, and so it was more for fun, and and it won an award. There was such a thing as an awards program for public access TV, and in the Twin Cities. For the system that we had it on, we won an award for our little film. So it was fun to do, and certainly wouldn't win any awards now. And I still have it, and I've always I need to put it on a more digital form right now, and I've probably got to get it up on YouTube at some point. So I promised some folks that I would do that. So I've got to look at it myself, make sure. It's been a long time since I've seen it. Yeah, maybe make sure I want that. Yeah, I looked. It was 30 minutes. I think it was all right. So I remember it because the University Chronicle did an article, and that's where the photo, I think, was. I think the editor at that time, Carl Puckett, who I kept in touch with, actually. We came from the same high school. He's works for a newspaper out in Montana, and he's the editor out there. So it was a wonderful opportunity as a student to get into film, and didn't go down that road. I made a driver's education film probably 5 years later, and similar. It was a musical comedy driver ed film, and that was an hour film, similar type thing. And the St. Cloud Times back, I think in '88, did a story on that also as a student, because I went with my sophomore year, I think the cow tipping one, and then the driver's education film called The Driving Zone, and we really since that didn't air on public access, we used all kinds of music that we probably shouldn't have, but I used that actually in driver's training because I own a driver's training building. I used that for probably 15 years as a film that I showed in driver's education that went through the whole gamut of getting a license. And I even had a little cameo from Bobby V. He did a voiceover for me on seatbelts, a little thing that I had him. He was gracious enough to record, and so he was in my film. So I had, you know, The Driving Zone starring Bobby V and a bunch of other less known actors. I had musical scenes where the kids would get up in classroom and sing the driving song, and I had some fun with it, but didn't end up in any way making it a career, fortunately.
Yeah. Well, you know, those kind of things that we just kind of do for fun, and then it develops into something. You kind of combine fun into what you're actually doing, and then, well, you know, and that kind of, I don't know, transition into maybe something else out of this, but it is, you know, just what people do to have fun. And it's, you know, not necessarily the cow tipping, but the, you know, kind of making fun of the cow tipping or just developing something to have fun. And, you know, that's what I found with, you know, producing this Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. A lot of it is just, you know, people getting by day to day. You know, there's that, there's the historic buildings, there's, you know, what used to be here, what used to be there, that kind of thing. But, you know, a lot of it is, you know, what people would do. You know, what do people do with their lives? I mean, you know, people work, but then, you know, they work, they go to church, something like that, and the church can be connected to fun and everything. But then there's, like, for example, Cream City Tattoo. That's in an old bowling alley.
Yes.
And, you know, these...
Which is amazing when you go to that building and think, people bowled in something like that. The structure, I mean, compared to what you have now, times change. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, and then just, you know, some of these things have stuck around, but some of them haven't. You know, like Pioneer Place, that's, you know, a 100-year-old building.
And it was a lodge, you know, for the Elks, and lots of changes. Yeah, we've got buildings that used to, and this is always amazing, because I do history tours around town, and I talk about how prevalent tobacco factories were. We made cigars in a number of establishments downtown. We grew tobacco in Minnesota, and so there were tobacco fields just right in St. Cloud, folks made a living of making cigars and sold them all over the country in the thousands. And that was right downtown. There's a number of existing buildings that still, you know, that were at one time factories for making cigars and tobacco grown here. You wouldn't even think of, I mean, that doesn't exist, and the tobacco fields do not exist. You know, when I tell people, yeah, they grew tobacco in Minnesota, people don't even think we could have grown tobacco. I got a photo that used to hang in my wall when I was in the state senate from the corrections department that showed inmates harvesting tobacco at the St. Cloud Reformatory. They actually were out there harvesting it, and I got the photo from the corrections department because one of the bills that I authored at the legislature was to ban smoking in prisons. So it went full circle there. They actually used to harvest it to not being able to. That was in 1997. But there's some businesses that used to exist and things, again, what people did on their own time that now, you know, that's why I always, you know, talk about even what we do now, government efficiency and such. There's a lot of things that we do now that we won't do in the future. And there's a lot of people that are, you know, students at St. Cloud State that are going to be in careers that don't exist. And mm-hmm. that's ever changing and at a much more rapid pace, you know, over the last 50 to 100 years than, in fact, probably over the last 10 years than over the last 100 years. I mean, the change is amazing. But I love history, and I was a history major at St. Cloud State and never really knew what to do with it. Now I give trolley tours and talk history over a living. But it's fascinating, some of the things that buildings used to be and level structures, and to kind of get the real I see a photograph from someone was just showing me some photos this morning of Lake George back in the 30s, and you know, of some, you know, just looking at, look more not so much at the people but what was around there, and just fascinated by some of the structures and how things have changed significantly during that time. So it's a neat perspective.
You're in tune to 88.1 FM KVSC, and in today's episode of the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota, we're talking with St. Cloud Mayor Dave Kleiss and how a knowledge of history can help us understand our environment while we're in the environment and can help guide decisions about the direction that we go as a city.
We get all the time, the things that come up daily. That's what I love about what I do as mayor. Every day is completely different, and the perspectives and the people I talk to are constantly changing and evolving. And, you know, you just mentioned on the history piece and how that's, you know, that we things are so rapidly changing. But, I get people that say, you know, I'm not a big fan of history. Well, you are, because everybody, everything you do has some, foundation of in the past. Even a lot of the technology that we have, you know, I grew up born in the 60s, and you know, very young kid at that time, but most of my in the 70s, when I was watching a lot of TV, a lot of those things, you know, I was a big Star Trek fan, so I watched the Star Trek, and you think about what was on Star Trek, a lot of those things happened. I remember as a kid watching, wow, these doors open automatically when somebody comes up to them. Well, we've had that for a long time. The fact that you could communicate with somebody with the little communicator that used to click out. That became a cell phone.
Moved past that.
Yeah, and we're past that. The fact that you could, you know, that's why Star Trek had many next generation.
See, I know.
Because you had evolved. But if you think about, I'm still waiting for the complete hologram system where you can walk into and it's getting close because we have 3D printing. I mean, so we have a lot of things that people imagine, and a lot of things that people grew up with, they were able to take from that and create something from it. So you wonder sometimes, you think, you know, were they just futuristic and looking into the future? No, they were creating those inventions of the future, because a lot of kids were watching that, a lot of people were watching that, and it created that desire to, you know. And again, people look at the past and look at historical buildings and hear about those stories or remember those stories, and they build on those types of inventions. So you had some very, you know, unless you read about that and can even pick up what it has done and how it has transformed things. Everyone wants to continue to transform those things into the future. So the past has a significant impact on what happens. And again, because it's so rapid now, and the fact that things can change, and with the advent in the technology and the ability to compute and do those things, even increases even greater capacity than we've ever had in the past. And I'm fascinated. I mean, that you said, what's, you know, I'm just recently I was over at St. Cloud State and looking at their 3D printers, and you know, I asked one of the vendors that were there, and I go, so now can you print that in chocolate? Because that's what I like, you know, they're making all these things. And he said, yes. you have the technology. Right now it's in plastic, you know, different forms, but you can print pretty much anything. And eventually, he was saying that eventually you'd be able to, you know, have a printer at home, and you could download a prescription from a pharmacist. I mean, do you have a certain amount of chemicals that need to be done, and or food products, and that gets you right back to Star Trek, where you can go to a computer, Picard, tea, Earl Grey, you know, but you can do that right now, because you can talk to computers, and that's no different than some type of pop vending machine. But Siri, I think about Siri, and Siri is, you know, always, for me, Siri is more useful as a Is it correct? I get together with folks all the time. We talk about things, you know, and history and what's going on. And Siri is just kind of the verification system for some of my friends' conversations. Yeah, this is exactly the way it was. Let me ask Siri that. You know, you get. We have the technology now and that information that's just that quick. Even you look at how the trivia has evolved. How that annual event in February has evolved because of technology.
We write questions in a very specific way now because we have to Google proof it. That's what we call it.
That's evolved. So even how we look at the past and facts is I'm a huge I'm social media, there's two that I, one actually, Twitter. I'm a big Twitter fan, and I don't do a lot of tweeting because I don't follow tons of people, but I follow certain, news people, and I follow this Uber Facts. There's a site that, where you can, it's just mindless trivia, but facts of things that you just don't think of. 400 million years ago, a day was 21 hours, and now it's 24 hours. fascinating little things. But you think about how that's evolved. You'd have to study and read tons of books. I can just go on Twitter and in less than 140 characters, I can get some facts that really that are interesting in conversation, but also just to really look at language. I saw one today because I look at that every day. There was one about the word nice. The original meaning of the word nice was stupid.
Wow.
And how that's evolved and even think about some folks who, you hear the word nice, and you think about that. Some people actually still use it without knowing it, that's what it was. But so now when I tell somebody that they're really nice, I'll just say under the original term. In a veiled way of doing it. But it's interesting how even language has changed and words change. We've got words that every year that Webster's adds to the dictionary that didn't exist in the past.
And they got words that they take out.
Yeah.
I found a Century Dictionary from 1911. It's approximately a foot and a half thick. It's about 11,000 pages, and I couldn't resist it. It was at a used bookstore. I must buy this thing. And, there are words that just, they're not around anymore.
And it's amazing, that how that evolves. And languages, I get, we have a German heritage here. So, a lot of folks came here in the 1800s from Germany, and you got documentation. My heritage from way back is German. So I've got an old Bible and some old documentation, but it's in old German, Altdeutsch, which doesn't exist. The language doesn't exist. And, you think about how that's evolved, and you think about some of the immigration that takes place. And, growing up, my father used to tell me, at home, they always spoke German. But again, they spoke an old German that didn't, as they came to America, it didn't evolve as it was in Germany. So the language, and same with a lot of traditions. You get lutefisk if you're Norwegian, and if you go to Norway, they aren't even lutefisk anymore. It was something that people brought over and then kept those traditions. And then in the actual country where the traditions started, it changed and evolved. So it's more of a even the Germans that come over here, some of the things that, that they think, those are traditions that ceased to exist in Germany. They're old, but here it continued during that period of time. So it's fascinating just, even from a, to me, everything always goes back to history. And as I was talking about food, because two things with me, it's always goes somehow around food and history. So there's all these little hidden things in a community. And from, my perspective, just those conversations and every day, there's something unique. I love to go beyond the facts and the human piece of those, the history about, who lived here and, what were those things. And that's fascinating. I'm a avid traveler. So when I go places, I hit all the tourist things that everybody needs to hit because you got to do that. But I really like to get into the cultural aspect of the little places where people don't go and
what do people do?
Yeah. And what do people do here? And that's the cool thing. As mayor, I get a better opportunity, which is I'm very fortunate to have the opportunity to meet a lot of different people on a regular basis and get to know them in a little different perspective. perspective than you would. You know, we all usually, most people, we hang around similar people that we see all the time every day, and so we think the whole world, everyone thinks that way. I am fortunate to be able to you know, get to talk to a lot of people that have a lot of different perspectives that may not necessarily agree with me, and I, you know, they, you know, vice versa. But it's fascinating. I always encourage people, get to, you know, whenever you get an opportunity, if you're with a, you know, in, at a place, try to get to know people that are, that are different. Get out of your comfort zone sometimes too, and because you're really, it's fascinating, the similarities first of all that you have, but also just a different perspective, that people see things from a different perspective, which is really cool.
Yeah, just for example, just last weekend, the St. Mary's Block Party.
Yes,
it was Slip Twister and the Stearns County Pechanga Society were playing. Love both those bands. I've seen them many different venues here and there, but I'd never been to the St. Mary's Block Party. So my friends and I, we go to it, and you know, we're dancing, and then other people started dancing as well. And then it's just there. At first, there was a little bit of a us and them, because we didn't know who they were, they didn't know who we were. But then just kind of blended, and everybody's having a nice time. Everybody's having a good time. Everybody's chat. We're all there doing the same thing. But, you know, just because of circumstances within life, we had never actually, I didn't know those people. They didn't know me, but yeah. Now we do.
That's the neat thing. Yeah, I love that type of opportunity. And that, it was at the Block Party too. And just, I love the idea of that outdoor, you know, mass and that whole thing. And yeah, same tip. It's similar to what we do at Summertime by George every Wednesday all summer long. You bring a lot of people that, from, and it's really, you know, from young to old, to all, you know, a very diverse group. And it's fascinating all around one band that, you know, it's not really the band or the music. It's just the fact you're just bringing a bunch of folks together. It's really cool. From a community perspective, as a city, we got lots of choices too. And, you know, when it comes to the budgeting, there's lots of people, you know, Summertime by George, for example, a wonderful event, you know, 13,000 people when the Fabulous Armadillos did their show on the last night. You know, yet I still, you know, I always get one individual and that calls and says it's too loud. You know, we shouldn't be, you know, doing it. And I'm thinking, you know, that, so you got to balance that. And we, you know, again, I don't ignore anybody, because everybody's opinion should be respected. We may not agree, but we need to respect that and see if there's a way to accommodate. And in the end, you've got to make a decision. You have to accommodate for the greater good in the community, and you got to make that perspective, you know. And but here, there's an example of you can't think of a thing that's more positive, but not everybody agrees with it. So, mm-hmm. So we try to bring the sound down a little bit, try to, you know, but we do an exemption to the noise ordinance because of it. So, but in the end, it's still going to be, there's going to be some sound. I don't consider noise, it's music. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one person's music, maybe another's noise. I mean, we don't all have the same tastes in that respect, but that's why they try to mix it up a little bit and try to go with something that's tends to have a larger population would like, for, you know, for the main thing. But even there, Summertime by George tries to even sometimes put a different band at the beginning, you know, and they start like at 5 for like an hour, and that kind of mixes it up a little bit. And yeah, that's, a smaller crowd shows up for that, and then the big crowd needs to have something that's a little bit more. But they try a regional, you know, approach, try to get regional bands like, you know, Fabulous Armadillos, I just love, and, you know, they can do a lot of different, you know, I love it when they, you know, when they get into the, they did the 70s show a while back, you know, or they did the Survivor, you know, they do Motown, you know, they, when they do something specific, you know, it's really, really neat. But, next year, you know, I can't see how much that's been. But again, brings people together, different perspectives, different parts of our community. You know, brings a real diverse crowd, and
then it wonderful. Works with the, you know, the new band shelter that's going up as well.
It's new, just, yeah, it's a spinoff of you know, it was something we had in the plan originally, and because we can program now with the Summertime by George, certainly we don't have to worry about trying to we kind of put it on hold when we did the original design there, because we didn't know if we could program. We just want to put a structure out there. No one use it. Well, we know it. We can program it. You know, at least 12, 13 weeks out of the year. And we know great theater can also do some performance. You maybe you could have some Shakespeare in the Park or other bands. You
I'm
know,
pretty sure it's going to get used.
Yeah, it'll get used. It'll get used a lot. You know, somebody was even told me the other day, you know, could we, you know, if we do that, could you have like a wedding? You know, we'll probably figure out a way to rent it. And sure, I don't see anything wrong with that. I mean, as long as it's You know, it's it is, you know, you clean up after yourself. It's not disrupting the rest of the park. I don't have any problem with that. So, so we probably have some type of fee to make sure that that happens. But something reasonable. Yeah, there, you know, we got to make sure we cover the costs. But, you know, so, but well, it'll all work out. It'll be a nice looking stage and well used. And we're going to have it all. We're going to start building it this fall, and it'll be ready for the first Summertime by George next year.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, while we wrap up real quick, and you can just let people know about, you know, a little bit more about the trolley rides that you do and the town hall meetings. How would people find out more information?
They can go to the city's website. Every Friday afternoon, we post the town hall meeting for the following week. I have a town hall meeting every week. Have since I was elected mayor. I had one of the things I think it's extremely important is you connect with people and have, give them an opportunity to talk to you and access. And I don't have a meeting that I do where I. You know, it's basically I'm listening to folks during that, and I do it once a week at different times of the week. People can host them if they want, but always look on the website. I do it different days of the week, different times of the day. I've had one that lasted an entire 24 hours. I've done them, you know, in the middle of the night. I wanted to make sure people had an opportunity because I always used to have them at different times, and someone would say, "Oh, we work at different times." Okay, all right, I'll have a 24-hour one. There should be no excuse to not come to the town hall meeting because I stayed up all. 24 hours, and it was at City Hall, and we had people coming in at 3 in the morning, so it did work. But so I do that once a week, so people can look at our website, which is www.ci.stcloud.mn.us, or just Google St. Cloud. It basically comes up first. And then people can always contact our office by phone, 255-7201. My home number's in the book, so 253-9535. You can call me at home on weekends, or if you see me out somewhere, you got a an issue with something, just feel free to stop me. With use discretion. If I'm driving or something, don't roll your window down. That's fine too. I guess I can pick that up too. But I don't like to be distracted when I'm driving. Yeah. I do want a driving school. that's weekly. And trolley tours, I do history tours on a regular basis. I just kind of look for those. On our website, I try to do about 8 to 10 from the spring to fall. I'll have one more coming up before it gets into winter, and that's basically just an hour and a half tour around town and hop on the trolley. You need to. Trolley only holds 25 people, so you need to, when we do set it, just call and then reserve a spot. And that's an hour and a half tour of history of St. Cloud. It's not just kind of each time I do it, it's a little different. So feel free, if you've been on one before, come again.
Excellent. Well, thanks for talking with me today, Mayor Klein.
Oh, anytime.
And we look forward to having you back at the trivia contest at the Pioneer Place in the Granite City Radio Theater this next.
Oh, absolutely. I love it. Since I'm defending champ, I get to come back, until it won't be hard to knock me off, but I look forward to, I've been on the Uberfax, Twitter accounts, and I'm ready for that stuff.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, thank you much.
Yeah, take care.
And once again, in today's episode of the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota, we've been talking with St. Cloud Mayor Dave Kleitz. For more information on the mayor's office, including Mayor Kleitz's weekly online message and upcoming town hall meetings and trolley rides, you can find it on the City of St. Cloud's website at www.ci.stcloud.mn.us. This has been Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and this program was made possible through support through the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and has been produced at KVSC, a proud member of AMPRS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities.